and welcome to Here and Now, the Dawlish and Tynmouth Talking Newspapers. Today's date is Friday, 19th of June, 2026. I am Fran Frank, and I will be leading the Blue Team today. Let's meet our first two readers.
Hello yet again, I'm Nev Pope.
And hello, I'm Chris Brathwaite.
Welcome ladies, nice to see you both. Right, the lead story from the Dawlish Gazette is Fighting Teens Spark Police Dispersal Order. A group of up to 50 teenagers were reported to have caused mayhem at Dawlish Warren over the weekend. Residents described the youngsters as being drunk and fighting before heading into Dawlish on Saturday evening. It was also reported the antisocial behaviour escalated further when a man was assaulted outside a Dawlish takeaway. Police confirmed they were called at 7:30 p.m. to reports of antisocial behaviour linked to a large gathering of youths at Dawlish Warren. A spokesman said, "A dispersal order was put in place. We received a further call at around 9:35 p.m. reporting a large fight, mostly involving youths, at Piermont Place. One man was assaulted, resulting in bruising and swelling to the head and a grazed elbow. A second man was also assaulted, but suffered no injuries. Inquiries are ongoing." Witnesses reported the large group of teenagers, estimated to be aged between 14 and 16, hanging out at the Warren. One described it, "There were so many groups of drunken teenagers throwing litter and falling over." Another said, "I witnessed drunk teenagers being intimidating to people just trying to walk past them. They were also running across the road frequently. The amount of cars that had to suddenly stop was getting higher. There were reports of girls fighting, shouting abuse at passers-by, and a further fight involving dozens of teenagers seen near to the fun fair." Doesn't sound very good.
Traffic arrangements have been announced as Powderham Castle prepares to host thousands of people to four consecutive concerts. Organisers of TK Maxx Presents Live at Powderham is urging concert goers to plan their travel ahead for the four nights from June the 25th to the 28th, featuring headline shows from vocal powerhouse Teddy Swims, seven-time Grammy winner Alanis Morissette, and global superstar Lewis Capaldi. But there's been a backlash from local residents who face lengthy detours for 4 days running. County Councillor Rosie Dawson explained a lot of work has gone into planning travel arrangements. She said, "Undoubtedly there will be an impact. The A379 will be open each day, but only until 2 p.m. After 2 p.m, Dawlish residents will have to follow a diversion route which will be via the A380. Stagecoach 2 bus will run normally each day until 9 p.m. Great Western Railway has scheduled additional trains before and after the shows from Starcross Station, a 15-minute walk from the castle, to Exeter St David's and Newton Abbot. From 9 p.m, some lanes around Starcross and Kenton will become one-way in order to get concert traffic out. It's estimated 26,000 people will be attending the Teddy Swims concert alone. But there have been complaints from local taxi firms that just one firm has been selected as taxi partner. Organisers say pick-up and drop-off locations for private cars and the taxi partner are at Exeter Racecourse and Exeter Science Park, with shuttle buses running from each site to the festival costing £10 per person. But residents living nearby are unhappy about the road closures, particularly as at previous concerts the road remained open. One said, there would be a huge disruption to Kenton Village as the events are getting larger. Another said, the volume of traffic is ridiculously disruptive to people living here, including those attending. One added, why there is not a drop-off point from the Tynmouth area is ridiculous and also expensive on top of the tickets. This needs looking out for future events. Many complained it's going to be chaos and unfair on drivers to have such a long detour, particularly with the increased cost of fuel. Another said, I just feel the decisions have been made without thought for any of the residents in Cockwood, Easton and the Warren. We simply do not have the infrastructure to support these events. Promoters, Cuff and Taylor, say they have set up a range of travel options allowing fans to choose the best route for their journey, with the aim being for the majority of people attending the live concert to use pre-booked public transport. Councillor Dawson added that some lanes surrounding Starcross and Kenton will be one way, and there is access only for residents after 2 p.m. Shuttle buses are running return trips from Exeter City Centre to Powderham. A park and ride will operate in partnership with Stagecoach from Exeter Racecourse and Gold Car Parks. They are located a 10-minute walk from the arena, and they're sold out for Saturday and Sunday, but there are some tickets left for Thursday and Friday. All car parks have to be booked in advance. More information about transport and travel options can be found at liveatpowderham.com, and fans are advised to follow Live at Powderham's social media channels for all updates.
My goodness.
Yes, chaos incoming, I think.
My first one is plans to save historic landmark are approved. A bid to save a vulnerable historic landmark in Starcross has been given the green light. Teignbridge Council has approved a scheme to conserve the Grade 1 listed Brunel Tower, which has been on Historic England's at-risk register for 2 years. Designed by Isambard Kingdom Brunel in 1845 for the South Devon Atmospheric Railway, the Pumping House Tower is currently used as a clubhouse and boat store by its owners, Starcross Fishing and Cruising Club. Supported by Historic England, HE, the club's plans to repair and restore the building have been given listed building consent. HE has welcomed the approval. A spokesman said, we have formally supported plans to repair this pumping house at Starcross, a building which is very much at risk. Placed on the risk register in 2024, due to its declining condition and water getting into the building, makes the application is for exterior repairs and reversing some inappropriate later works that have had a negative effect on this special building. These include the replacement of the capping to the tower and the repointing of open joints. HE has worked with the Starcross Fishing and Cruising Club on this carefully designed proposals to improve the condition and restore its architectural character, and supports the approach the club is taking to repair this much-loved landmark. A planning statement said the main purpose is to provide a maintenance strategy for the conservation and repair of the exterior stonework, which is constructed from a red conglomerate stone known as heavy tree breccia, the condition of which is giving cause for concern. The plans also address some changes which are directed at enhancing the heritage asset by resolving weathering details that affect the rate of deterioration of the fabric, and by reversing or mitigating detrimental past changes to the building. Completed in 1846, the pumping station was designed by the engineer Brunel for the South Devon Railway, then under construction to link Exeter and Plymouth. It housed stationary steam engines used to power trains by means of a vacuum pipeline laid along the railway. The innovation used an ultimately unsuccessful technology known as atmospheric propulsion, adopted by some railway companies at the time. This system proved problematic and was abandoned by the SDR in 1848 in favour of conventional steam locomotive haulage. Since then, this building has seen numerous changes of use and alterations. Currently, its condition has been of concern due to a backlog of maintenance problems, including the water ingress through walls and degradation of stonework. But the recent approval means repairs can go ahead. There will be new weatherings and flaunchings, if you know what that is, a new parapet coping to the chimney tower, replacement of guttering and windows and doors, and removal of other detracting features.
Firefighters were called in to tackle a fire which broke out at a site containing building materials in King Stainton. Crews from Newton Abbot were alerted yesterday to reports of a fire in the open on the outskirts of Newton Abbot. Thick black smoke could be seen rising some distance away from the blaze. On arrival, firefighters found a quantity of building materials and tyres were well alight with the fire spreading towards a nearby van. As the crew got to work, the landowners used a telehandler to remove a large amount of blockwork so firefighters could access the whole area. The fire was caused accidentally when an incinerator bin was left unattended and too close to other combustible materials. Newton Abbot firefighters called in another appliance to attend to bring more water. Two firefighters wearing sets of breathing apparatus were sent to tackle the fire using a 51mm compressed air foam system jet. That's a CAFS. This was used due to the remote nature of the fire and a lack of water hydrants in the area. A spokesman for Newton Abbot Fire Station explained, "The CAFS solution, when mixed with water on board the appliances, creates much larger quantities of finished foam when compared with that of just using water alone. Therefore, we could continue to tackle the fire for longer whilst awaiting the arrival of our colleagues. Although the incinerator bin was believed to have already burnt out, this incident dramatically highlights the importance of ensuring that if you have a fire, it's in a clear area, you stay with it, and you have a means of extinguishing the fire should it become larger than desired. The quick work from the crews ensured the fire was quickly knocked back and that the damage to the van was minimal. We would also like to extend our thanks to the crew at Torquay for their assistance at this fire."
Now, TV star Barrymore visits Dawlish. TV legend Michael Barrymore received a warm welcome when he ventured on a trip to Dawlish. This former presenter of Strike It Lucky moved to Devon earlier this year and has forged a new life which he is sharing on social media. His latest YouTube video shows his visit to the hometown of the iconic Black Swan. Throughout his visit, he was stopped and greeted by locals and visitors, chatting and posing for photos. There's a lovely photo of him here with people from a hairdressing salon. His video of the visit has so far nearly 30,000 views, and he is now recognized as much for his TikTok and YouTube as for his TV fame. First stop was 100-year-old shop Gay's Creamery, where he met staff and was given a free ice cream with a flake and topped with clotted cream. After a packed visit, Michael was full of praise for the resort. "There's something very peaceful about this place," he said. "It's really cool. I'm impressed. It's spotless and the people are lovely. There's a village feel." What an amazing welcome. Everyone has been so lovely. "It's old-fashioned, but that's what makes it work. Very chilled. Everyone is so relaxed. It's stunning." During the visit, he also managed to fit in takeaway fish and chips, heading under the viaduct to sit on the seafront, which he described as a lovely spot. A spokesman for the Seabreeze Takeaway said, "We love that Michael visited our lovely town. Do you think he was worried by seagulls?" Even better, he enjoyed his lunch. Nothing but praise all round. Fab for Dawlish and a perfect day for it too. Earlier, he popped into Annie's, the salon in Brunswick Place. Hairdresser Carly Holmes said, "This morning we were chatting about Michael Barrymore, and the next thing we knew, there he was outside the salon. He was absolutely lovely, took the time to chat with us, and was really interested hearing about the new creative business opening next door. We thoroughly enjoyed meeting him. Sometimes the most unexpected moments turn into the best parts of the day.
A public notice issued by Teignbridge Council advertising the disposal of some assets has caused outrage. The council has since apologised for any unnecessary alarm caused by the publication of the statutory notice. The assets named in the notice are Cromwell Way, Buffy Tracy, Palace Meadow, Chudley, Morningside, Dawlish, Heath Close, Heath Hill, Prince Rupert Way and Naseby Drive, Heathfield, and Ashburton Road and Courtney Park, Newton Abbott. Teignbridge Council has subsequently explained that the disposal of assets is part of its plans to reduce the financial pressure on council services. But publication of the notice sparked anger, particularly the inclusion of the popular Courtney Park. One resident complained the notice was small, so people don't notice and object. All these parks should be saved, especially Courtney Park, the first thing visitors see from the station. Bandstand still used, some of the best trees in town. In response, Teignbridge Council said it had been reviewing its property land portfolio for several years as part of its long-term plans to most effectively run services and use its assets for the benefit of the community. A spokesman said, as part of this, the council has been talking with partners, including town and parish councils, about the future of some assets so they can be managed locally where appropriate or disposed of onto the open market. To comply with the relevant legislation, the council is required to advertise any disposal of public open space for a period of 2 consecutive weeks. This is routine part and helps make sure it is open and transparent. However, there have been complaints the notice was issued on May the 28th, and objections and comments have to be received by June the 18th, and it's now the 19th already. Dawlish councillor Rosie Dawson criticised the council, saying it needs to do better to communicate what the notices mean. She said, a list of these assets are going to town and parish councils asking if they would like to take them on. In some areas, this can work really well.
Calls for water firm to be re-nationalised. A trade union branch representing workers across Devon and Cornwall has called for South West Water to be brought into public ownership amid growing concerns over sewage, pollution, water quality and rising customer bills. Members of Unite SWW08, the largest Unite branch in Devon and Cornwall, passed a motion backing the re-nationalisation of the region's water supplier. The branch believes it is the first local union branch in the South West to formally call for South West Water to be returned to public ownership. The motion comes as water companies across England face increasing scrutiny over sewage discharges into rivers and coastal waters, as well as criticism over executive pay, shareholder dividends and infrastructure investment. South West Water, which serves around 1.8 million customers across Devon, Cornwall, parts of Dorset and Somerset, has faced repeated criticism from campaigners and local politicians over pollution incidents and wastewater releases. The union's intervention follows a series of motions passed by councils in Cornwall expressing no confidence in the company. As part of the Clean Water Campaign, which has called for greater accountability and improvements to water quality. Unite nationally supports public ownership of key utilities, including water services. However, supporters of the motion said the decision by the Devon and Cornwall branch reflected growing local frustration with the current system. Andy Cooper, treasurer, said water should be treated as an essential public service rather than a commercial enterprise. People in Devon and Cornwall are paying some of the highest bills in the country while seeing sewage pumped into rivers and seas. Public ownership is not an abstract idea here. It's a practical response to a system that is failing community. The debate over water ownership has intensified in recent years. Polling has repeatedly shown strong support for public ownership, while environmental groups have argued that the current regulatory system has failed to prevent pollution incidents. Water companies, however, have maintained that significant investment is being made to improve infrastructure and reduce storm overflow discharges, arguing that many of the problems stem from aging networks and increasing pressure from population growth and extreme weather. A spokesperson said the company is investing £760 million as part of a 15-year investment to tackle storm overflows and has reduced spills by 17% in the last year, adding that spill duration is down by 25%. We do understand how important this issue is to our customers and communities, and we're already delivering real progress, the spokesperson said. We know there's more to do, but the data shows the plan is working. Penryn Town Councillor, who is also a member of Unite, said concerns about sewage spills were driving demands for change. It's time to end this charade, he said. We see massive sewage spills every time it rains and continuing discharges even when it's dry. The union branch plans to discuss potential routes to public ownership at its upcoming Unite on the Hill festival at Maker Heights in Cornwall later this month. The motion will also be circulated to MPs, councillors and regional stakeholders, with campaigners calling for legislation that would allow water services in England to return to public ownership.
Work is underway on annual surface dressings across roads in Devon. Between May and September, Devon County Council says it will treat 150 sites covering 250 kilometres of road. Surface dressing does not include pothole repairs, though as it's a preventative measure which is used on roads which are still in reasonable condition. It helps stop potholes forming and extends the life of the surface, reducing the need for more costly repairs later. The process involves spraying a layer of bitumen emulsion onto the road, followed by stone chippings which are rolled in to seal the surface and improve grip. And because the chippings need warm, dry conditions to bond, work is carried out during the summer months. However, work depends on the weather, and if it's cold or wet, work may be rescheduled. Following treatment, most roads reopen the same day. Temporary speed limits are put in place to help the new surface bed in and to reduce the risk from loose chippings. Within a day, the newly dressed road is swept to remove loose chippings, and to minimise waste, these chippings are recycled. They're collected, cleaned and reused on future schemes. Councillor Dan Thomas, Devon County Council's Cabinet Member for Highways, said, "We know people get frustrated by potholes, so this is about getting ahead of the problem rather than reacting to it." Got the priorities wrong. Surface dressing is one of the most effective ways we can protect our roads. It helps us keep more of the network in good condition and makes the best use of the budget we have. There can be some short-term inconvenience while the work is carried out, but it's quick and it helps avoid more disruptive repairs in the future. We would ask people to take care on newly treated roads and follow the temporary speed limits.
Students get hands-on with Kia. Engineering students from South Devon UTC in Newton Abbott took part in a valuable work experience placement with construction company Kia. They visited the site in Lifton, where they had a rare opportunity to see engineering in action at a live water infrastructure project, where a new pump station for the River Lid is currently under construction. During the visit, 12 students took part in a full site tour, gaining a close-up look at the scale, complexity and precision involved in major construction work. They also took part in hands-on activity linked to real engineering challenges, helping them connect classroom learning with practical application. The day continued with a talk from the team who shared insights into the wide range of roles within the construction and engineering sectors. Students rounded off the visit with a Q&A session, asking thoughtful questions about pathways into the industry, apprenticeships, and future opportunities. Kier Construction is one of the UK's leading infrastructure and construction companies, delivering major projects across transport, utilities, education, and public services. With a focus on innovation, sustainability, and community partnership, Kier plays a key role in shaping essential infrastructure nationwide. Claire Plum, the head teacher at South Devon UTC, said experiences like this are invaluable as they help students see how engineering shapes the world around them. It was fantastic to watch their confidence grow as they engaged with professionals on site. Matthew Shanks, the CEO of Education Southwest, said, "Providing students with direct access to industry is at the heart of what we do at the UTC. Opportunities like this ignite ambition, broaden horizons, and help young people to understand the incredible careers that engineering can offer. We are grateful to Kier Construction for giving our students such an inspiring and memorable experience."
Fire stations across the region have raised more than £20,000 for the firefighters' charity over the past 12 months through a series of community car wash events. Crews, including those from Teambridge, have been busy washing vehicles at stations throughout the year, with all donations going towards supporting the charity's work in promoting the health and well-being of firefighters and their families. Devon and Somerset Fire and Rescue Service thanked local communities for their continued support, saying every donation has made a meaningful difference to the total raised. They also paid tribute to firefighters who volunteered their time outside of operational duties to help organise and run the fundraising event, thanking the stations that have hosted car washes over the last year.
And lastly, the latest bowling action. My last one for today. Dawlish Bowling Club are this year being represented by 2025 club champion Mark Hinder at the Champion of Champions tournament. After a bye in the first round, he beat Richard Keitley of Torquay in round two, 21-13. In round three, Mark prevailed by a score of 21-12 against Newton Abbott's Philip Underhill. Mark now advances to the semis and will play either Tim Locke of Paignton or Alan Routledge of Torbay Country Club. Meanwhile, Dawlish had their second match of the season and took on rivals Marina. In overcast, windy and cold conditions, can't believe it's summer, Dawlish came through on three rinks with wins from the winning skips, John Challoner, 19-13, Kenny Lenton, 17-7, and Kevin Gibbons, 30-7, whilst Alan Maher rink lost 8-20. The score was 74-47 to Dawlish, and the league points finished 12-2. Captain Alan Maher labelled it a very good night for the club.
Thank you, ladies. That was very good. There's no letters or family notices this week concerning local residents. Let's say hello to our next reader.
Hello, it's Mo Hutchings.
Welcome, Mo. I believe you've been on holiday, but we won't go into that.
No.
No. The main thing is you got back in time. Right. The headline for the Tynmouth newspaper, Royal Recognition for Wildlife Trust Founder. The founder and former director of Shoulden Wildlife Trust has been awarded an MBE for services to wildlife conservation. Stuart Muir, MBE, received the prestigious recognition in the King's Birthday Honours List. The 70-year-old has become renowned as a prominent conservationist, zoo director, UK government advisor, and wildlife artist throughout his career. The citation stated that he has made a sustained contribution to wildlife conservation, professional development, and community service, including shaping DEFRA's approach to safe wildlife trade establishing facilities for seized animals to prevent euthanasia, and leading repatriations of illegally traded birds. He said, "I am, of course, immensely proud and slightly overwhelmed to receive this honour. I am very fortunate to have spent my life doing something that I love and working with so many wonderful animals and so many dedicated people." He is most recognized as the founder of Sheldon Wildlife Trust in 1983 and for his extensive work protecting critically endangered small carnivores and primates. He transformed the trust from a petting collection into a conservation center that is now the smallest member of European Association of Zoos and Aquaria. The MBA citation said he embedded inclusion into conservation practice, creating placements for young people and individuals with special educational needs. He was also at the forefront of encouraging community volunteering in zoos. He received the Lifetime Achievement Award from the European Association of Zoos and Aquaria in 2024, the highest accolade within the European zoo community. There's a very nice picture of Stuart. He is holding, unfortunately, I can't work out what the animal is, but he's very cute with little stripes and he's got lovely sort of soft fur. And I apologize, Stuart, if I can't work out what the animal is. Obviously comes from the Sheldon Wildlife Zoo. Right, the first article from the newspaper. Brighter prospects for Tynmouth Seafront. Tynmouth's long-awaited seafront illuminations are a step closer after Devon's Highways Department gave the Town Council's plans the green light. That's good when they're talking about lights. Mock-up designs have already been created for a salmon and anchor motif to adorn the 40 lighting columns along the seafront. Tynmouth Town Council has also earmarked £60,000 to pay for the lights to be made and installed. But Devon County Council has been unable to approve the technical specifications for the scheme while its Highways Department was in the process of drawing up a new policy on decorative street lighting. Tynmouth has been waiting for this hurdle to be cleared since March 2025. On Tuesday, June the 9th, Tynmouth's town clerk, Ian Wedlake, told the town council the Highways Department had finally given their go-ahead. He said, "We can now ask the lighting company to make the necessary modifications to its design so that the final version and the pricing can be agreed by the town council. The next step will be seeking planning permission from Teignbridge District Council, which could be granted within about 2 months from the application date. Once this is agreed, the installation of the lights can be completed by contractors. The lampposts are already fitted with electricity boxes suitable to power the lights." Ian said it is too soon to give a definite timeline for when Tynmouth Seafront will be lit up once again, but he is quite optimistic that progress will be much quicker now. "We've already done a lot of the work. The infrastructure is already there. So I think we are in a pretty good place." Tynmouth has been without its seafront lights since October 2021, when the County Council removed them for safety reasons. The Town Council has been working to replace them ever since. There's a very nice picture of the seafront road showing where the lighting will be, which of course is now empty, seeing as there's no parking allowed at the moment. So the lights are going to be seen by only pedestrians.
My first one is tributes to popular fish and chip shop owner.
A fundraiser has been set up after the sudden death of a popular Shoreden businessman. Andy Simmons was well known at the Village Fish and Chip Shop, which he ran for 14 years. His family had started a GoFundMe to raise £3,000 for his funeral following his death aged 45. He was described as a devoted husband to Dee and a loving dad and proud granddad to three beautiful granddaughters who meant the world to him. In a statement, his family said he was a much-loved family man and a friend to so many, known for his kindness, humour and the warm welcome he gave to everyone he met. He loved being part of the community, having a chat, sharing a laugh and serving the wonderful customers who supported us throughout the years. We are devastated by his loss, but we are grateful for the love, friendship and memories that so many people shared with him. He will be deeply missed and forever remembered by all who knew and loved him. We would also like to thank our customers, friends and the wider community for your support over the years. Your kindness and loyalty meant so much to Andy and to all of us. The family is hoping to raise £3,000 to help support Andy's family through this incredibly difficult time, and this will help us give him the best send-off he deserves. He was described as more than just a shop owner, and was a familiar face who made customers laugh with his kindness, humour and sarcasm. The family says since his death they have been grateful for the support and messages which have been shown to them, and has shown how much he was loved and how many lives he touched. To support the appeal, go to www.gofundme.com/F/Andy-Simmons, and Simmons is spelt S-I-M-M-O-N-D-S.
My next article, smartphone ban in school from September. A secondary school in Teignbridge has announced a smartphone ban from this September. Teign School is the latest in the district to become a smartphone-free school, following an extensive consultation process involving students, parents, carers, and staff. The consultation generated significant engagement across the school community, with more than 300 responses received. About 70% of the respondents were in support of the proposal. Feedback highlighted strong support for measures aimed at improving student well-being, reducing distractions to learning, strengthening safeguarding, and helping young people develop healthier relationships with technology and social media. The decision reflects growing national concern about the impact of smartphone use on children and young people, alongside increasing expectations for schools to create phone-free learning environments. Recent government announcements have indicated plans to strengthen national guidance around smartphone use in schools, with proposals expected to support phone-free environments throughout the school day. Teign School has emphasised that the move is not anti-technology, but instead focused on ensuring the best possible conditions for learning, concentration, attendance, social interaction and personal development. The school says it will continue working closely with students, families, staff and governors over the coming months to ensure a carefully planned and well-supported implementation process ahead of September. Last year, members of Devon County Council overwhelmingly supported a countywide ban on student smartphone use during the school day from the start of the next academic year in September 2026. Students at Teignmouth Community School have already been without their phones for 9 months. In September 2025, the school ruled that students had to either need to leave their mobile phones at home or lock their devices in a special mobile phone pouch during the school day.
More disruption as gas works continue. You'll be delighted to know it's not Dawlish this time. Drivers and residents are being warned of more gas works taking place in Newton Abbot and King's Kerswell.
Wales and West Utilities is set to start work on further areas upgrading pipes over the next couple of weeks. Work in the Shoreland Road area of Buckland Newton Abbott starts on June the 15th and, if it goes to plan, is due to finish in October. The work has been planned in conjunction with Devon County Council and it has been agreed that during the project, traffic management will be in place with two-way traffic lights on Shoreland Road from June the 29th to July the 23rd. Work along Newton Road in King's Kurzweil started recently and is due to be completed early next year. Initially, this involves rolling two-way traffic lights on Newton Road until August the 7th, and motorists are advised to allow sufficient travel time. In King's Kurzweil, the project is costing almost £780,000 over the next few years, and the intensive programme of wider mains replacement works will see over 2,500 metres of gas pipes upgraded across the area as the company upgrades the critical energy infrastructure in the area. In Newton Abbott, the cost is £800,000 to upgrade pipes, and the wider mains replacement works is upgrading more than 2,700 metres of gas pipes. Wales and West Utilities' Roxanne Whittaker is managing this work and said, "We're committed to keep the local community updated on progress. We'll continue to work closely with the local authority and commit to keep communities informed as projects are planned and delivered. We understand our work can cause disruption, but it is essential to maintain a resilient gas network that households and businesses can rely on every day. Once we've completed this intensive phase of work, we'll leave behind an upgraded network that meets today's energy needs and is ready to transport greener gases in the future. By completing this work now, barring any emergency repairs, we can avoid returning to the area and causing further disruption to the local community for decades."
I have a report here about the Tynmouth Probus Club that has been written by Rick Purnell. Steve Marvel gave sound advice to Tynmouth Men's Probus Club about how to get out of the ... brackets, trouble, bracket, as the guest speaker for our May meeting. We can all find ourselves in a difficult, maybe a life-threatening situation, but do we know what to do? Are we prepared to enable us to survive and get home? Steve made us believe that most of his audience, if going for a hike up a mountain, would wear the right footwear, have the right spare clothing for bad weather, and carry water and Kendall cakes, a mobile, and maybe a whistle. But who and how would you summon help? How long do you need to survive before help arrives? Much depends on how dangerous or remote a place you are travelling. A sound plan is to carry a survival pack for 2 days on land and 4 days on sea. If taking essential medication, carry a complete day of supply, just in case. Always tell someone, friends or family, where you are going and when you expect to come home. If in remote locations, leave a note in your car of your intentions. Make sure your phone is well charged and you do have the numbers to call that you need. Search and rescue, police, coast guards, message 999 or emergency 112. Or if it's patchy, a text might be your best chance for getting a message out. Use What Three Words for accurate location, especially if the weather gets bad. If in a car, stay with the car. How do you attract attention? Yes, waving both hands over your head, but have a torch if it's night time. What signal best attracts attention? Well, try is saying 3-second flashes, in other words, SOS. Wait a few seconds, then repeat another three in a regular pattern. You could use your headlights or a torch. Have emergency kit in your car. In other words, first aid kit, windscreen, windscreen or window glass breaker. All right. And seatbelt strap cutter. I think this man's been in some terrible situations by the sound of it. But anyway, think, prepare. Can you light a fire if necessary? Have you got blankets or clothing to keep warm? Your very survival may depend on forward planning. Don't get caught out, he said. I think you'd be all a bit worried by the time you'd listen to that speaker. But anyway, it's all very good advice. Chris Inch, their speaker, gave the vote of thanks for a thought-provoking reminder to rehearse what and how to save yourself if going to remote or dangerous places. Just running out of petrol or breaking down in a remote location is all it takes. If any retired or semi-retired male readers within Tynmouth would like to know more about Tynmouth Probus Club, please visit their website, www.tynmouth-probus-club.org.uk. I'm smiling reading this one because the Probus Club actually meets in the Richard Newton Hall, which is round the corner from where I live. And I don't think any of these difficulties would arise in their car park somehow.
You'd hope not.
You never know.
Feel the folk vibe at Town's annual festival. There will be music in the air and dancing in the streets this weekend as Tynmouth holds its annual folk festival. Live bands and artists will be performing in the Triangle, on the seafront, in pubs and at other venues around the town. Morris Sides will be taking to the streets throughout Saturday and Sunday. Ticketed concerts, a ceilidh, workshops and a big sing-along all add to the mix of free entertainment, paid-for performances and the chance to join in. The festival starts on Friday, June the 19th and runs until Sunday the 21st. The main acts, which are ticketed performances, are folk duo Catherine Roberts and Sean Lakeman at 8 p.m. on Friday and the Sam Sweeney Trio at 5 p.m. on Sunday, both at St James Church. The free music at the Triangle includes the Jays, the Plymouth Pipe Band, the Cameron Mills Youth Group, Queen Anne's Revenge, Ripon, Bow Creek, Mireia Grace, Alex Lord, and the Devon Youth Folk Ensemble. A wide variety of dance troupes will be bringing the streets to life, including the dark Gothic Beltane Border Morris, Appalachian dancers and traditional bells, and handkerchief sides too. Singers can take a workshop with Sandra Smith of the Lost Sound Choir or just join a free sing-along session led by the Jays at the Alice Cross Centre. And there's a ticketed ceilidh at the Rugby Club on Saturday evening with the band Warts and All. Festival Chairman Ian Palmer is pleased with the programme for this year's event and says, "I'm proud to say that our committee has worked hard to encourage more than 30 Morris sides with 500 performances." We also offer a selection of traditional folk artists, workshops and concerts, so please come along to enjoy all the entertainment that we have for you, and also to enjoy Tynmouth with its different array of local businesses. We welcome you all.
Scout Hut could be replaced by new homes. A disused Scout Hut in a Teambridge village could be replaced with homes, as a proposal to develop the site is submitted to planners. Submitted by Teen Property Holdings Limited, the application is seeking consent for the demolition of the existing disused Scout Hut at Radway Hill in Bishop Stainton and replace it with two semi-detached dwellings. The development represents a more efficient use of previously developed land within the settlement boundary of the village, while responding positively to the character and scale of the surrounding area. Teambridge Council are due to make a decision by August the 3rd. The design and access statement goes on to say, the proposed demolition of the existing scout hut and construction of two dwellings at Radway Hill represents a sustainable and appropriate form of development that fully accords with the adopted development plan. The principle of residential development, including the provision of two dwellings, has already been firmly established through previous planning permissions, and the current proposal seeks to deliver development consistent with that accepted by Teignbridge District Council. The scheme has been carefully designed to reflect the character of the surrounding area through its scale, ridge height, and use of materials that are common locally, ensuring that it integrates successfully into the existing streetscape. Safe and appropriate access arrangements can be achieved without harm to highway safety or neighbouring amenities. In the absence of any material planning harm, and having regard to relevant local and national planning policies, the proposal is considered by us, I assume this means Teignbridge, to be acceptable.
Now one from the sports pages. Slade the General as Chiefs rediscover their edge. Henry Slade has become the enduring figure through Exeter Chiefs' modern era, and now the England international is at the centre of their latest resurgence as they head back to Twickenham for a Premiership final. While teammates have come and gone through cycles of success and struggle, Slade has remained a constant at Sandy Park since his debut in 2012 against London Welsh. The 33-year-old centre has won two Premiership titles, a European Cup and an LV Cup, while earning 74 England caps in the process. This season has marked a defining response to last year's ninth-place finish, the club's lowest in the top flight. Alongside senior figures such as Jack Yendall and Ollie Woodburn, Slade has helped re-establish standards and rebuild belief within a squad that endured heavy defeats and uncertainty. That leadership was evident in Saturday's dramatic 27-26 semi-final win over defending champions Bath at the Rec, which sent the Chiefs into a final showdown against Northampton Saints. Even a first-half sin-binning for a deliberate knock-on could not derail his influence as he returned to help drive a comeback from 26-10 down. Slade said he always believed they could turn the game around. As the game went on, obviously they're a very powerful side, but we felt if we could stay in it during those longer passages of play, we could come good, he said. Our body language, our energy, it was just pipping theirs. I felt if we kept digging in, staying in the fight, sooner or later it was going to come good. Around 50 or 60 minutes, we really took the fight to them and came out with the win. Head coach Rob Baxter believes Slade's experience has been vital. Our most experienced player did the stupidest thing on the field on the day, but he's been great. He talked really well. When you've won finals, you understand you can do it. I think he's helping the lads believe that. My final one is headed Wheelchair Walk to Help Zoo Project. A push, in quotes, for funding has been launched to support Shoreland Wildlife Trust's project to grow some of its own food for the animals in its care. The Zoo Food Project has created thriving gardens on a spare patch of land at the zoo and two Shoreland allotment sites, supplying leafy greens, herbs and vegetables for several different species. It's a win-win situation, producing fresh, organic, low-cost food for the animals, while cutting costs, food transportation miles and packaging waste. Now, the two volunteers who created Zoo Food, Harry Coleman and Joe McKenzie, have launched a crowdfunding appeal to raise £6,000 for their own projects and two related causes. They want to help the Shoreland Wildlife Trust with other animal care costs and support a conservation initiative in Indonesia to save the endangered Java slow loris. To support the online crowdfunder, Harry Coleman will push his mother Dory in her wheelchair from Dawlish to Shoreland Zoo, about 4 miles, on Saturday, June the 20th. Harry said, "Now some people train for marathons, some climb mountains. I've decided to push a wheelchair several miles along the coast. At the time, it seemed like a good idea. But every push, every hill, and every mile has a purpose. We're raising money to improve Zoo Food's growing facilities, including repairs to our polytunnel and greenhouse and the development of new growing areas. These improvements will allow us to grow more food, grow a wider variety of food, and become even more sustainable in the future. Harry's wheelchair push will start from Dawlish Seafront at 10 a.m. on June the 20th. Donations can be made at a wide range of supporting businesses in Tynmouth, Shoreditch and Dawlish, many of which are also match funding the sponsorship pledges. To donate, visit the Zoo Food page on Shoreditch Wildlife Trust's website, www.shoreditchwildlifetrust.org.uk/zoo-food.
Thank you for that, Mo. Very nice idea, but the gentleman could be very hot. It's going to be a warm day tomorrow. Right, now we have a few dates for your diary. Tuesday, 23rd of June, Dawlish Community Transport will be visiting Tavistock. Tickets cost £22 each and can be obtained by telephoning 01626 888 890. Also Tuesday the 23rd of June, Dawlish Community Transport will be holding their annual general meeting. If you need further details, telephone 01626 888 890. Another one for Tuesday the 23rd. It's always busy on a Tuesday, I think. Shoreditch and Ringmore will be holding their annual general meeting. I don't know where, but I'm sure somebody will be able to help. 24th to the 27th of June, a musical entitled Disco Inferno will be performed at the Pavilions in Tynmouth by the Shoreditch Theatre Company. Tickets cost £20 and can be obtained by telephoning 01626 249 049. Tuesday the 30th of June, Dawlish Community Transport will be visiting Burnerville Nurseries. Tickets cost £16.50 and can be obtained by phoning 01626 888 890. 4th of July, which is a Saturday, Shoreditch Theatre Company will hold their summer fair in the Victoria Hall between 9:30 a.m. and 3 p.m. Also Saturday the 4th of July, Starcross Fishing and Cruising Club will have an open morning between 9 and 12, and you can learn how to row or to participate in a variety of other water sports. Friday the 10th of July, Sandy Smith in Shout Out to Motown at the Shaftesbury Theatre starts at 7:30 p.m. and tickets can be obtained by phoning 01626 863 061. For your information, the first Wednesday of each month at St. George's Church in Holcombe, between 2 and 4 p.m., you can drop in for tea, cakes and a chat. Another one for your diary, on the first Thursday of each month in the Holcombe Village Hall at 7:30 p.m., the Holcombe Ladies Social Group meet. Call Liz on 01626 865 292 for further information. Although this one may seem a long way ahead, Tynmouth Sings Summer Charity Concert will take place at the Pavilion Theatre in Tynmouth on Saturday the 18th of July. The performance starts at 7:30 p.m. and tickets will cost £10 for adults, £5 for children. I mention this early because tickets for this event normally go very quickly. So if you want to get along to this event, I suggest you phone 01626 249 049. We are now nearing the end of our programme of Here and Now. recorded at the studios here in Dawlish on Friday, 19th of June 2026. We hope you have enjoyed the programme, which was brought to you by the Blue Team. Our readers for the day have been Nev Pope, Chris Brathwaite and Mo Hutchings. Copy and dispatch has been organised by Mo Hutchings. The programme was presented this week by Mike Smith. Thank you, Mike, for coming in. Here in our Dawlish studio, and the team leader for today has been Fran Frank. The next Here and Now recording will be Friday, 26th of June, when it will be the turn of the Red Team to bring you the local news. The Blue Team send you our best wishes, and if you are celebrating a birthday or any other special event, we hope it goes well. So now it's goodbye from everybody here in the Blue Team. Goodbye.